Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. And Joe, we are gearing up here for Sunday the 22nd, which is right around the corner now, at Silverton, 5 p.m. start. What time do doors open? Anything special going on beforehand?
Nah, we're going to do doors open at 4. We might do 2 pre-show matches. This isn't a show with the Rumbles or Battle Royals, so, you know, that's 20 or 30 less spots that are available. So, you know, but we had some issues. Danny Limelight messed up his knee at the Booker T show, so he thought he might have tore something. Right. Literally 30 seconds ago, I just got a message from him. I guess he get the MRI, so he's gonna be he looks like he's gonna be a go for Sunday.
Wow.
So
wow. Wrap that knee tightly.
Yeah.
Damn. So that's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah, because and, at this you know, point. Not looking to, we have a vacated title already,
right.
You know, obviously injuries are injuries. You can't really do nothing about it, but it's like, you know, there definitely wouldn't be a tournament if it turned out Limelight's going to be out for 8 months, because, you know, if he's going to be out for a little while, we're good to go. If he's going to be out, oh no, he's going to be out 9 months. You know, we're going to have to figure out what we're doing. You know, it could be, you know, and I guess, you know, it doesn't make any sense to think about it, but it'd be like, hey, you know what? Maybe the luck of the draw Rumble, the final two guys end up wrestling a match for the heavyweight title. But it looks like we don't have to go that route. So, you know, the card is officially set. We got 7 matches. There was an issue yesterday with Damian Drake. We hadn't set his match. He was a little upset about it, as I was actually on the phone with Limelight trying to get information. So thanks to Damian Drake's stupidity, I was going to do a gauntlet match, which we had talked about. And, you know those emos whining and crying about everything, being it survival of the fittest. You know, you don't just get what you want. We're trying to get different things going in the matches and how they work. So instead of a gauntlet match where 4 guys, you know, 2 guys start, another guy comes in, and at that point, the final guy wrestles Damian Drake, who at that point would be the most rested. Right. But because he can't shut his mouth, the dumb fuck, now it's going to be a scramble match. So now the 4 guys that were going to fight it out to wrestle Damian Drake, and right now we got the 4 guys. And I might, out of spite, just add an extra guy. You know, so we got Watson. We got Bryce Saturn. We got Damian Desire, and we got Eli Everfly so far. So now, win the match, tough guy. You know, now there's 5 of you. Now there's 5 people in the match.
Wow.
Instead of, you know, because, you know, a gauntlet, you idiot, is a one-on-one match, because you don't have to do anything to the very end because you're the champion. You know, I don't know who advises this guy. But, you know, dumb motherfucker. So there you go. So now he's got a 5-way and maybe a 6-way. We'll see. Maybe the, you know what? Maybe the winner of the pre-show match will get into that no limit scramble. So that's the final match added to the show. It's like, dude, you're on the flyer. You're on the show. I get it. You know, what do you, an NFL team that you got to study tape of the guy for a week to know who you're going to wrestle? You know, half the time you go to a show, you don't even know who the fuck you're wrestling.
Right.
So, whatever.
Graves doesn't happen to be in a car or Gallo or...
He could, you know. Class and Reno are coming up from Phoenix. Miranda's the ring announcer. She's coming up from Phoenix.
Right. And there's no... You haven't had any contact with an Escondido or...
You know, that'd be interesting in the No Limits, you know. But, yeah, there was discussions like, hey, well, you know, so what happens to Dante King if Limelight can't make it, you know?
I assume Dante would have assumed that he just gets awarded the championship, right? If his opponent forfeits the belt.
Sure, I guess if, you know, Triple H is the one making the decision. Or was it? Who was it? Who gave him the belt? Remember they gave him the belt?
Yeah, I think it was. Wasn't it Triple H? It was the heavyweight. It was like the WCW title was, the world title was retired or something. And then.
Yeah, I remember them handing somebody. I thought they handed Triple H the belt.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to do anything to win it.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's, I think the, for whatever reason, the belt was like retired or taken. And then they just gave him the belt. That's right. So now, what does Dante King look like in terms of he has to wrestle someone that he knows? I mean, is it not playbook obvious? You know, it's funny you just mentioned watching tape, but playbook obvious and social media dictates we know that Danny's knee is hurt. If Dante isn't working that knee that whole match, would that be just the most ridiculous thing? Is this something that gives him the way to win?
I guess this works out to Limelight's advantage because this is an anything goes match. So anything goes means anything goes. So at that point, I think that helps Danny Limelight more. I think if it's a match that happens, you know, inside the wrestling ring,
right?
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, Limelight could take the you know, the cheap way out and get DQ'd or counted out or whatever. But now, that's not in the cards. It's survival of the fittest. What are we doing for this match? Anything goes. So the strong survive, and you know, Dante King, you know, what is he willing to do to become the heavyweight champion? Is he willing to throw out the playbook and say, fuck it, fuck this motherfucker, you know? And, you know, it definitely changes the dynamic of a regular one-on-one wrestling match. So, you know, this was the stipulation that was added before. So, you know, Dante most likely is going to have Gypsy Mac at ringside. So, and in an anything goes match, you know, she could have a baseball bat with her just in case Limelight has, you know, the Boricuas and the Bodega and the LAXs, you know, coming out. You know, who's to say, you know, Slice Boogie or Papo Esco or, you know, one of his longtime friends doesn't, you know, reappear.
I don't know, Joe. I think Gypsy has to be afraid of the kid because Danny's daughter has been very influential, man.
Well, you know, I'm a little spoiler alert, you know, it is school season. Right. So she may not be available.
I'd put my money more so that she's probably filming a movie. You know, that kid has got more talent and is busier than Danny sometimes. So you know that sets up the heavyweight match. What are we expecting in terms of the qualifiers to get into that final match for the Nevada State? On paper, those two matches look very intriguing, especially when you look at that promo picture and you see those two massive grown men, and then you see Bodie, who is going to have to be trying to just escape alive, I think. He's got his hands full with crazy fucking Greg Sharp and huge Shogun, man. How does he get to that final match?
Well, many people say that Bodie at 17 is very wise above his years. So he is going to have to strategize. You know, he knows Sharp. He's beaten Sharp.
Yep.
He was in a unique qualifier of a triple threat match where the only one who didn't advance was the guy who was pinned or eliminated, which turned out to be Braxton. So they both moved on. So, but now this one is one pin wins, one submission wins, and you got Shogun, you got Bodie, and you got Greg Sharp, the longest running Nevada State champion of all time.
Right.
So one of those three advance. And then we got the intriguing matchup. Vandegrift and Jay Vidal, they know each other backwards, forwards, any way you want to see it. And then you throw into the mix MK's protege, Sam Adonis, who world traveled, AAA, MLW, you know, I think he defeated Remy the last time he was here.
Yeah.
You know, he's wrestled Kenny. So Sam Adonis, he's the real deal. And, you know, MK hasn't had a belt in a while. So you don't know where the Army is going to fit in that match. So it's right. Definitely going to be interesting to see who advances. And then the two winners will compete later that night to become the new Nevada State champion. So definitely, some intrigue there. You know, Shogun and Gregory Sharp, you know, they kind of ran neck and neck, Nevada State champion and heavyweight champion. So they never really touched gloves.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see that dynamic, you know. That alone as a singles match is, you know, worth the price of admission. And then you got Bodie going to be flying around and, you know, Shogun's laying the hammer down on Gregory Sharp at some point. You know, is Bodie able to sneak in?
Well, and could Bodie be thrown seven rows deep by Shogun? Because I'm pretty sure Shogun could press him up and fly him into the crowd.
Well, yeah, you know, it's definitely true. We might see Spike Bodie,
yeah,
you know, get tossed into the seats.
And you know, it's interesting too, because when you look at those combinations of the guys from one match to the other match making the final match, it is pretty interesting that right now, as a booker, as someone who's conceiving the ideas of where you're going with it, there's some intriguing stuff. Like Sam Adonis, we haven't seen against any of those three guys. So if Sam is in that final match, I mean, all three of those guys, it would be a spectacular match. You know, especially like to see Greg Sharp versus Sam Adonis. Oh my God. You know, Shogun versus Sam and Bodie versus Sam. It would just be wonderful. But then you got, you know, that possibility of Jay is kind of, you know, loved by the fans, but is also kind of a heel. So, you know, you
got I think Jay's a fan favorite at this point.
Yeah, but yeah.
You know, I think the love for Jay is there regardless.
So we could possibly see Vandergriff and Jay kind of team up and try to take Sam out and finish business.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they team up. Just, you know, it's kind of like that Matt Vandergriff, Damian Drake dynamic that, you know, they're brothers, but when the bell rings, it's a totally different story. You know, yeah. Everybody wants to be the man.
Right, but take out and Sam.
We saw it with Vandergriff and Damian Drake, and we've seen it, you know, the only time in the 15-year history of FSW that the belt changed hands, where Jay was the champ, Matt won the belt. The very next show, Jay won the belt back. Then Matt won the belt back. Three shows in a row. First time, only time ever. And then it was loser leaves town. And everybody thought Jay was going to win it back, and he didn't. And then Matt went on his long run. And then he won the cash in the case and decided to insert himself before, you know, the match. So here's a belt. Matt's been a tag team champion. Matt's been a no limits champion. Now he's trying to get, you know, that triple crown.
Right.
You know, Shogun's been a heavyweight champion. Shogun's been a tag team champion. Yep. He's shooting for the triple crown. Greg Sharp, he's been the Nevada State champion. He's shooting to be the Nevada State champion again.
Now, theoretically, let me ask you. Greg's got a case. So he gets eliminated in that first round match. Then let's say Vandergriff and Shogun wrestle in that championship match. Shogun wins. Greg can theoretically come out and cash in, right?
He theoretically can. Okay.
All right. I just want to see how wild your mind is going into.
Yeah, there's so many scenarios, you know, in that situation.
And technically, if a person loses a loser leaves town match, at what point did he get allowed to come back to the town?
Well, he did leave town, and then he came back to town. You know, in that situation, you know, let's just say Jay Vidal at that point in his career, he was feeling his oats. He signed with TNA. You know, I'm leaving town if I don't win. Well, I can honestly say I'm not sure that was actually in the actual contract. That said, he had to leave town. And me wanting to do what's good for business, what's good for my business is if Jay Vidal is available, I want to use him. So I could massage the contract details, because honestly, I believe that contract has been lost forever. And there is no valid proof that Jay Vidal had a signed contract that stated he would leave. Now, a loser leaves town. Did it say a loser leaves town forever match? Or does a loser leave town match?
I've always loved that premise because it worked in the territory days to, you know, the fact that guys were going on to different territories and stuff. And, you know, it could be 2 years before they came back.
Yeah, and Jay was gone a while, yeah. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he disappeared.
So speaking of stipulations, just out of curiosity, and I don't think I've ever asked you, have you ever had a hair versus hair match?
Nah, we've tried. We yelled at people who got haircuts and cut all their hair off. It's like, dude, save it for a fucking match, man. What are you thinking? So I'm not positive. It sounds like I can't believe we haven't, but right. We may not have.
Right. I think
no, so. Yes, we did. It was Mike Delight versus Rush at the Silver Nugget.
Wow.
Which had to be in 2010, maybe 11.
Wow. And Mike, I would assume Mike lost?
No.
Rush lost. Really?
Rush lost, yes. The Hater Nation got involved and Rush took the L.
Wow. That's pretty, yeah. Okay. Gotta dig up that. That's got to be somewhere, right? On the
yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah,
you know, you can go on Roku and watch the FSW network.
Right.
I saw people there that I swear I didn't think I'd ever see again in an FSW ring. So.
So, the tag team match. Looks like it's going to be pretty intense. Yeah.
Total ode to the Survivor Series.
Yeah.
6-on-6, but it's three teams against three teams. If one member of the team gets pinned or submitted, the entire team's eliminated. Because right. Really, you know, we can build a whole show around 11 eliminations.
Right. I'm surprised you didn't put the tag titles then hanging on top so that the final two teams then it becomes a ladder match on top of
way too long. We got too much going on. That's why we're only doing 7 matches.
Yeah.
But you know, 7 matches, there's 12 guys in one match, there's 8 guys in another match, there's 6 in the tournament.
Right.
But that takes up 3 matches, so technically it's still 6 in 3 matches. So I guess, yeah, it's not too crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you add whatever you're, you know, throwing onto the pre-show too.
If we do 2 matches, one might be a 6-man tag. And I've gotten a request. Ice Williams is looking for an opportunity, and for all he's done for FSW, instead, you know, the younger guys, hey, you know, giving Ice Williams, you know, they're going through a lot of turmoil and chaos with the faction. So either Ice in a singles or the faction in a 6-man, but you know, I'm not too sure how positive Ice Williams is about not wanting to do a singles match to team up with those guys at this point. So I don't know. So, you know, we got a few more days, you know, we skirted one issue. It looks like with the Limelight thing. So it was like, okay, now I got to get a match for Dante, but now we're all set once again. And now it's like the hard push, you know, trying to see. Mikey went by. Oh, I don't think the fucking marquee's up. I hit up the guy. Oh, did you send a video? It's like, bro, I've sent videos and I've not sent videos. Either way, you guys put them up. Like, how about this is your job to make sure that our stuff is up? And it was like, I'm like, well, I'll send the fucking video now. This is last Wednesday. So, you know, it still gave us, you know, 10, 11 days. Oh, yeah, I talked with the guys. They said it was up. It was like, well, I'm glad you went out of your way to fucking find out for me. You know, again, it's like that little shit. Like, no matter what I try to do, it's just like, I don't know. It just gets frustrating at times.
And
for family forum, here we come, brother.
Well, you know, it baffles me, because you know I'm in that area a lot, and I sure as hell know that they have a mermaid bar swim that everyone needs to come out and do it on the weekend, you know, when it comes to seeing the video package, it's like, what is going on? I did see at the,
they'll put the battle bots up all the time though.
Yeah. Which, you know,
and even on their property, I'm wondering that deal. Right. Well, yeah. Here's an interesting one. I could swear, and again, I'm not 100% positive, but I talked about it in the past, and it was like trying to get on the circulars and all the other stuff on the email blasts. And I finally met him in person again, because of course I had to give the money, so. Gave them the money, and I'm like, hey, bro, you know, I just got, you know, an email about Generation Idol. Right. I got an email about some other thing. Well, you know, you guys are four walls. You know, these guys, you know, we pay. Right. These guys, you pay. So any money you ever spent on them is now doubled and tripled. And you still know we're going to bring you more people and more revenue. So I'm not understanding. I get the concept. So we're paying these people to be here. We really need to try to get as many people as we can to come. But the track record shows you are highlighting tribute artists. Tribute artists are... because I learned this from Santana Jackson. Very important difference. Yep. Tribute artists sing as themselves the person they are imitating. So Santana Jackson imitates Michael Jackson, but he sings with his own voice. He kind of sounds like him, of course, blah, blah, blah. So you got Billy Idol. I guess it's going to be a guy that kind of looks like Billy Idol.
Oh, it already happened. Joe. I was there.
Did he look like Billy Idol?
Yeah, actually, it was they were not bad.
Did he sound like Billy Idol?
He did. And then they had Journey USA, which I think is their third or fourth time within the last 2 years.
Oh yeah. And it's like, are that many people coming to see these guys? And again, I get it, but I also do see them on the house seats, which means they're trying to give away tickets for that event.
And it's heavily comped. That's the other thing.
Because, right. And it's like, yep. What do you mean you have to spend more money to create an ad to send out an email?
Right.
All you have to do is take our flyer and write up text, because I'm pretty sure we've had that done in the past. And just like on the website, you could put, like you do, Future Stars of Wrestling. Can't you just pull off that and send an email? And I'm not understanding why it would cost me more money to get an email blast. Wouldn't you want more people to come to an event that you didn't pay me for? So every dollar you make is a profit. And you already know you're making a good profit. You already know people are coming to the show.
Right.
So all you're doing is, hey, our Silverton email list of 100,000 people.
Yep.
You know, I don't know what the cost is. Maybe, like I believe you do, you don't send one email for Generation Idol. You send one email for the three artists that are going to be appearing that month. Right. So does it matter if you put my flyer as the fourth one? You just have to make it a little smaller, and now you include all the shows.
Right.
And again, I guess that's above my pay grade of knowing, but it just seems like it would seem simple. And I'm never, and that's the, I guess, the one thing. It's never really explained to me why it's such a difficult process. No. Why is it so hard to get something up 4 weeks in advance when I give it to you in 6 weeks? Right. Oh, well, they're really busy. There's a 5-minute loop, and it's the same BattleBots ad. It's the same Twin Creeks ad. It's the same Mermaid ad. at least 50 to 75% are the same ads.
Yeah.
It isn't like you're running 50 different events this month. You're running three.
No, and they plug in. So if they have their, you know, whatever tribute bands are coming in, they just plug it into the loop and that's it. It's not like it's, you know, it's
right.
Not
they like, got Los Lonely Boys coming in November, I think.
Right. And that's been on part of that loop for 4 months now or whatever. Right. So that is part of that permanent loop. And then
how many people are buying tickets to hear that one song?
You know what? And I'm sure that there's going to be a percentage of sales that's decent. Just based on the name recognition. But again, I think they end up eating a lot of the fucking cost on giving.
Right. I remember, you know, and I remember the conversation when they had Juice Newton, and I joke about it. And it's like Queen of Hearts back in the day, the morning, whatever the other songs you had, they were huge in 1980.
Yeah.
Like, yep. How many people are buying tickets to see Juice Newton that you have a billboard on the highway?
Right.
That there's three billboards in a row and they're all of the same thing. Like, why not throw ours in there? Why not throw something else in there? It's like, hey, Juice Newton, quarter of a mile away, Juice Newton, another 50 feet away, Juice Newton. It's like, aren't you defeating the purpose of advertising? Like, doesn't Cracker Barrel pay for their own fucking business? Like, you got to put Cracker Barrel up on there? You know, unless they're paying for it, I guess.
They're probably paying for it. You know, it's probably a rental, you know, ad space. But at the same time, it is fascinating that it seems like
with a stepchild.
Right.
Because we're giving them money. They don't feel the need to have to do anything.
Exactly.
Like, they're okay with one bartender, and they're okay with bringing in $2,000 instead of $5,000.
Right.
Which, again, defeats the purpose of everything they're saying about trying to bring in as much income as possible when we're the wild card.
Right.
You've seen, not one time now, you've seen four or five times since we've been back that the worst crowd we have might be this weekend, because when we came back, it was a big deal for the anniversary. The last two shows have been 500 plus.
Right.
And this one, everything seems to be, you know, kind of slow in the development of what we are trying to see and fighting for. And oh yeah. So we've had the conversation. First and foremost, you need to have the internet working. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing we can do. We're not getting a refund.
Right.
We're not getting anything other than, yeah, you know, it's like last time. He wasn't even there. So everything was hearsay about the bartender. Oh, you can't talk to my people like that. What the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean talk to your people like that? Us saying, hey, you need to get another bartender. Everybody's complaining. They're waiting 40 minutes for a drink.
Yeah.
And then you wonder and you're like, hey, the bar did pretty well. Yeah, God forbid everybody only waited 10 minutes for a drink. They waited 40. How many people got out of your line? Like, we're making you money. And then you're bringing nothing back to the table.
Right. And then, like you said, you know, you've said this. I think I've said this, too, is that that wait time translates into either people are waiting in line and they're watching the show, or they're going to miss a little bit of the show so they could go into the casino, find a waitress, or go to one of the bars, grab a drink, and then go back to the show.
You know, if my wife didn't have to work, I would buy 10 beer. I would buy 20 beers at $5 and just have her walk around with her TAM card and sell them for $7.
Right.
And she'd make 40 bucks in 5 minutes.
Right.
It's like the little things.
You'd have the vacation paid for.
There you go. You know, pull one of your 20 waitresses off the floor in the casino.
Yeah.
Or pull one bartender of the 20 bartenders that you got at your 20 bars that there's not even 100 customers in your place on a Sunday.
Well, and I was just going to say, and the biggest point there is the fact that when they do these tribute bands, it's either a Friday or a Saturday. So you've already got that traffic going on. It's a frequent. It's
right. We're getting you people on a day that you would normally not even be open. Maybe it's bothersome because that would be his day off. I don't know.
We got to bring in more stuff. We got to pay more people. Wait, what the fuck?
You know, I don't get it. It's well, like,
I mean,
pulling teeth, man, pulling teeth.
And hopefully it, you know, again, it doesn't affect, hopefully the, you know, another scenario is the walk-ups. It's like, you know, having to deal with the box office instead of just the straight, you know, walk-ups. It's another pain in the ass.
Yeah. You know, the thing in that, though, is people are going to buy it at the box office. They're not going to go all the way there and not go to the box office and go home.
Oh, right. Of course.
But, you know, there are, you know, they're claiming you can swipe and doing all the other stuff. And it's like, you know what? I'm not totally illiterate, but it's still a difficult process for me to even understand how to get tickets.
Yeah.
You know, sorry. I have a problem with my phone and these QR codes, and that's how you do shit. Like right. When I go to a restaurant, my wife has to do it at the places because her phone, my QR reader, I don't understand. Like right. I've had problems with it. So if I've had problems with it once or twice, I'm not doing it six times, seven times, eight times. It probably will work, but how about you just hand me a fucking menu?
Right.
You have a menu. If I go sit down, you have a menu. You can just hand me a menu for 5 seconds so I could see what's on it. You know, swipe here to see the menu. How about you just fucking hand me a fucking piece of paper?
It's one of the things that COVID did that excelled that process 10 times quicker because, oh, God forbid we touch menus. Here's how we post the QR code now. And it's like,
of course. Yeah. But hey, you know, this weekend I got to see my boy Chris Masters. Hadn't seen him in a while. Good conversation. You know, Scott had his card right. thing at the Tuscany. A right. little disappointing. Not really a lot of people there. But had some good conversation. You know, Cage was there. Talked to D'Lo. I can honestly say. The dream matchup of the Hardys versus the Dudleys will not happen after talking to Devon Dudley. It's amazing to me that a guy will work a singles match for more than half less than a tag match.
Yeah.
I got the price quote. And it was like, so you'll work a tag match for double plus half of a singles match where you have to do half the work. But I got to pay you 2.5 times your rate just to have it as a tag team. Oh, I'm like, nice talking to you, sir. Well, you know. It was a wake-up call, I'll tell you that.
It's interesting, too, because the that comes right as Bubba Ray just made a revelation that the only reason he went into the Hall of Fame is because he wanted to do it for Devon. So, I mean...
Oh, I thought it was because he'd want to charge more money.
More money. but you know, I think one of the participants in the party is kind of driving up the but then you know but then again hey you could have that dream match of Matt versus Devon
wouldn't be Devon. Well, first off, this conversation started with he was retired.
Yeah,
but then somehow I still got a number out of him. That was the crazy part. yeah, I don't really wrestle anymore, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I was thinking of doing this. And then it became, well, you know, if I was going to do that match, you know, I'd do it on Monday Night Raw. It's like, well, Monday Night Raw is not asking you to do that match. Somebody is trying to pay you to do that match. Of course, I don't say that.
Right. But,
you know, it's like, I'm not sure. That's a match that you would be able to get more than your rate for, understandably, if you went around and toured that match.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've been in the business 30 years, nothing but the utmost respect. But on an independent level, you know, a promoter has to somewhat have an opportunity to try to get that money back. And, you know, it's disappointing because then you see some prices that you think are out of this fucking world. And it's like, well, maybe that price isn't so bad.
So we're gonna get a Matt Riddle match on.
Never know. Again, I'm in conversation with Ricochet. He said he's available to do it. Now, the question becomes: it isn't about a rate. It's what you want to do it for. It's a guy like Ricochet has made a lot of money in this business. Right. Does he want to wrestle a show in Vegas against a Brian Cage or somebody? You know, no disrespect to any FSW people, but Ricochet's not going to be like, unless he knows one of our guys and he likes him, because, you know, when we did the training, Ricochet's been there a couple times. Right. And, of course, first time came with Lacey. Well, when Lacey's there, usually Vandegrift's there. So if, they spark up a thing and he likes what he sees from Vandegrift, a younger guy who's, you know, doing stuff, and he wants to work that match and says, hey, I'm willing to do it for this. Yeah, that's possible. But for me to walk up to him and say, hey, you know, I want you to do a match as great as a Jacob Austin Young, a Gregory Sharp, or whoever it is, it's got to get the juices flowing. It's like Brian Cage. He has a great contract with AEW, but Brian Cage wants to work. But Brian Cage does not want to just work. He wants to work super cool matches against people that he's interested in working.
Yeah.
So him working an FSW show, of course he wants to be involved in a match with a Hammerstone or doing that tag possibly we were talking about, which it's funny that he ended up becoming his partner, Toa and Juicy, when they were working and getting involved in that. But, you know, go look at Brian Cage when you see him on the independents working. He's working top name guys. He's working guys that he can have cool matches with, people he's friends with. You know, we almost did it last year and still trying to maybe do it for Mania weekend. A Brian Cage presents, you know, the body guys or whatever. And we're going to do one for his birthday. So, you know, he's got good connections. They're going to work the, you know, Joe Raid's good, but Brian Cage is going to get the really, really good rate to work on his show.
Right.
So, you know, we would be behind it, but it's trying to spark Mania weekend with a show that it's like, oh shit, we got to come to this. Cause there's going to be a lot of choices.
Yeah.
And there'll be a lot of big companies there.
Yeah.
So just running an FSW show, why are you not going to the Collective? Why are you not going to a TNA show? Why are you not going to the Ring of Honor show? Because from what, that was the issue talking with Cage, that they always run Ring of Honor.
Right.
It's the one time. Like, normally they don't want to be involved when WWE stuffs, but AEW continues to run the Super Card of Honor or whatever it's called, Mania weekend. So they'll run that. And generally with Mania being Saturday and Sunday, they do Friday. Well, we can't do the Brian Cage thing on the Friday night because if he's not on that show, they're not going to let him work that our show. Right. So it's going to be interesting to see, because they could do Thursday. And we could still do Friday, or we could do Thursday, and they did Friday. So, you know. Well,
and you also got a little more leeway, too, now, because, you know, technically, really, it's people start getting in town now on a Tuesday because there's so much going on
Wednesday. Yeah, yeah, Wednesday. We weren't even looking at doing Wednesday, and then two people took the day. And then there's a company, Demand Lucha, out of Canada, and they were going to do Thursday, but they moved it to Wednesday because they heard CMLL was going to be doing a joint show with somebody on that Thursday night.
Wow.
So they didn't want to compete. And also, you know, certain guys, like I know they use Gringo Loco and they use Pentagon. Right. Now, whether they can use Pentagon, because, you know, the rumors, Motor City Machine Guns, Pentagon and Phoenix, that they're all signing with WWE. So right. We will see.
Yeah, it's and that's the other interesting thing, too, is as you have months to kind of plan, you're also in that possibility at any point that so-and-so that you're looking to work with now has a contract with WWE. But the other time, you know, the other thought is WWE now is so much more open-minded to working with companies that if a cross wanted to do something, you probably could put something together, you know, more of a possibility than it was 3 years ago, you know, considering that
but not Mania weekend. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to.
They did it with Blitz, but they did it with Barnett last year. So, you know,
yeah, I mean, for whatever reason, it seems like Brett's got a little in, you know, supposedly him and Stephanie get along well, and, you know, he's been able to get like he did, you know, Shayna Baszler.
Right.
And, you know, GCW is at a different level than FSW. You know, unfortunately for us, you know, well, we wish we can go to 100 cities in the United States and people say, hey, look, nobody, GCW didn't even draw. They only did 500. It's like, well, you know, what indie does 500 consistently? I see the West Coast companies that they step away from where they're at. And their draw is nowhere near it. You know, West Coast Pro was in town. Nobody even heard really much about the show. You know, a couple hundred people. When I seen them in L.A.
Right.
And away from their home venue. And the Suavecito is getting attacked by a Japanese legend. And it's like, it's the place where GCW ran. It's the set two levels. And for whatever reason, people run there. It doesn't seem to draw very well. But again, there just wasn't a lot of people there. So right. When companies go out, House of Glory, you know, we did really good for an FSW show. But if that was a straight House of Glory show and they rented the arena, the majority of those fans were ours.
Right.
So I'm not sure, you know. At the end of the day, like I said, it was FSW, and we brought in Santana and Amazing Red. So it was really an FSW show because they didn't bring in everybody, and the few other people they brought in were not known anybody. So they're not going to draw 500 people in Vegas on an off weekend that isn't Mania. But GCW will and has.
Right.
So, you know, people can bitch, they can plan all they want, but, you know, they all wish that they were doing the things GCW was doing. They got Kurt Angle fucking booked. JBL shows up on their show. They use Jinder Mahal. It's right. Like, you know, they're spending shit tons of money and they're bringing it in. And they have a great deal with Triller TV. And from what I hear, that is a phenomenal deal.
Well, it's and Triller's probably, you know, hanging their hat on the fact that GCW is a bread and butter for them.
But yeah, and that's why they took away the whole per pay-per-view market. GCW was the reason they went to the monthly $8 and every pay-per-view is going to be on there. And I'll tell you what, we make not a shit ton of money, but we still make way more than we did on the pay-per-view platform of the per-views, because now we're going from people having to buy it. And as I said, you know, our high end was a couple hundred buys.
Right.
Well, the GCW show had 3,000 views when it was that way instead of 200 buys. So we had 3,000 people that were watching our shit.
Right.
You know, a really good show for us is, you know, anywhere over 1,000. And House of Glory kind of fit in there. You know, we had more than we would normally do for a live viewing.
Yeah.
But the overall numbers were similar to like our anniversary show.
Okay. Yeah.
And being it was at the FSW Arena, it was, you know, double our best FSW Arena show.
Right.
Like, I haven't looked recently, you know, but I know we had well over 1,000 views. And, you know, now it's been a month.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, and again, can't stress enough, you know, if wrestlers are smart, just knowing that exposure is out there, man, get yourself booked on the East Coast. You know, get yourself booked in the Midwest or down south, because people are potentially seeing you. So get out there, go venture out there, because, you know, you can be seen now on a bigger level. And it's something that you couldn't do years ago. So, all right. Final rundown of the card before we wrap up here, and you know, what are you looking forward to seeing happen with what's going on Sunday?
Okay, well, we have the FSW Heavyweight Championship match. Anything goes. We talked about that. Danny Limelight against Dante King. We have a Survivor Series old school. Three on three, six on six, whatever you want to call it, tag team match. You got the tag champs, the Billionaire Boys Club. You got the Golden Era, which is Dave Dutra and Wise Guy, been very, very impressive.
Yeah.
They've come in, they've won three or four matches in a row.
Yeah.
And then we got the MK Army, Big Duke Lawrence, and Kevin Koa with MK there. So that's that one side. And to be honest with you, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, lot of experience from the Golden Era, and maybe not as much with Billionaire Boys Club. But on the other side, you got Sky High, and they, you know, they've been doing it a while, but they're still relatively new in terms of longevity. And then you got Makeshift Chemistry, been doing it about a year. And they've been together maybe a little less than a year. And the Mariachis. So, you know, is it the deer in headlights scenario to where, oh, wow, you know, we got two young teams who haven't really experienced, you know, that big match feel. Mariachis. Right. Pre-show, battle royals, same thing with Makeshift Chemistry when it's come to the casino shows.
Right.
So this is an opportunity. You know, Makeshift Chemistry, many people believe, are destined to become tag team champions sooner than later.
Sure.
And their work, you know, speaks for itself, you know. and that triple threat match we had before Golden Era interrupted, they looked strong in that. Their match with the Golden Era was one of the better tag matches you're going to see. And the Mariachis, you know, they've had a couple of injuries, you know, but they're still very, very young. And there's those growing pains. And when you got people coming to see you and telling you how great you are, I'll be the first to say that I think that maybe that had a little effect on them. Because to be honest with you, you know, leading into everything, I saw them a little bit more down there working at it before classes and things like that. And again, I get it. You got work, you got things to do. You know, they had the match and I got a message from Gabe Sapolsky that day telling me how their gear looked tremendous. Didn't say how their work rate was, but you know, but that's something that Gabe noticed. That was the only text I got from Gabe that day was, hey, the Mariachi's gear is tremendous. So, you know, because they did the tryout and things like that, and they did okay. We had them wrestle each other, I guess, to do some stuff. But it's like, you know, any way you can get noticed by somebody in a higher up position, you know, okay. Well, now he took notice of you. Yeah. There was something about you. Now, make him watch your match and be impressed with that.
Right.
Because, you know, any little in you got, there's always a little something, something that helps you over somebody else be picked for something.
Right.
So we got that match. Then we have a Survivor match, 4-on-4, one pin wins. And it's Cody, Bateman, Judah Matthew, and Alice Blair, Southwest Snuff, taking on what initially was going to be, you know, led by Jacob Austin Young, but him getting the great opportunity of working New Japan, the FSW Originals, which included Jacob Austin Young, guys who've been with me for years. Sugar Brown's made a return. We got Clutch and Sugar, who we didn't think were going to be working together ever again. Remy Marcel, who was involved with feuds with these guys forever. Yep. Going back to Sally and the Dynasty when Sugar Brown was in that and in the Hater Nation and with Clutch. And they're all working together. And of all people, you know, it's the China Connection. And Maserati, who ended up getting unexpected help from the Originals in the match with Alice Blair. So you got 4-on-4 in that match. And then, as we said, we got the two Nevada State Championship Tournament matches.
Yep.
We got Sam Adonis returning to take on Vandegrift and Jay Vidal. The winner advances to the finals. And then we got Shogun, Bodie, and Gregory Sharp. So that's two more matches. And then the finals is another match.
Yeah.
And then we have now just added, which is the seventh match, is now Damian Drake. So if you like scrambles better than gauntlets, send a little thank you message to Damian Drake on his Facebook. Say, hey, Damian, thanks for being a fucking idiot. Being a dumb fuck, we appreciate it because you'd rather see the scramble that has Eli Everfly, Bryce Saturn, Watson, and Damian Desire, and card subject to change, so it's possible, you know, if Chris Bay is able to get an early flight or, you know, somebody in the Horizons, you know, last minute call. Maybe get it. Maybe Spider Warrior makes his triumphant return.
You guys are working with TNA, right? You can get Joe Hendry in if they just say his
name. Joe Hendry could show up, you know. Hey, Chris Bay's got a lot of connections. Maybe Ace Austin shows up. Who knows?
Damian Drake versus the TNA roster is what we're looking at.
Yeah, I remember Roman Reigns did that. Didn't he have a gauntlet match against everybody? Yeah. Or John Cena, one of those. Probably Cena. He probably beat 30 guys at once. Let me just say, Damian Drake is no John Cena. Okay.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. And then, of course, doors open at 4?
4 o'clock. No 8 talk, so I'm going to have to scramble for a good door guy. 8 talks can't get there to 5. You know, I was trying to see about moving the show to 6, but I wasn't able to. I wasn't moving it for a wrestler. I was moving it for ATOX, the guy who helps me run the door. The best in the business. GCW uses him. He ran the door at PWG. Great person. It's hard to imagine that I trust that guy more than most people. And I, outside of just being at the wrestling events, I really don't know the guy at all.
Right.
His reputation precedes him.
Yeah.
And if you saw the Phil Singer games, we have the cards are out. I know they're doing one at a time. We have 8 to come out. They look fantastic. I was hoping they'd be available at this show, but I'm pretty sure November 24th at Luck of the Draw, tentatively at the Silverton. But hey, there's tickets available. We still got some front rows. So, you know, get on the horn, hit me up. You want to save some fees? If not, go to the Silverton Casino. You know, you're going to have to pay for, you know, all the fees.
Yeah.
You know, I try to help cover some of the fees on like our regulars. So if you want to, save $6 on a front row ticket, hit me up. You want to save $3-4 on a GA ticket, hit me up.
Yeah, there we go. And again, hopefully the internet is working and everything's good, and Triller will be a go. So if you're not in the area, you'll be able to catch it on Triller. It was a nice buildup to the event. So it's going to be very fulfilling to see a lot of the stories kind of play out, especially the Nevada State title. Man, you can't be more proud of Jacob Boston Young and what he's doing right now in New Japan. It's amazing, man.
He even got a win.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, wow. Which is weird because I saw Jeff Cobb's on his team, but I haven't seen TJP, and I was pretty sure TJP was instrumental in getting Jake there.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's exciting, though, you know, to see someone who, you know, this has been something that's been a dream of his, and, you know, getting dreams fulfilled is just really cool to see some of the pictures and hear some of the stories. So, again, knock on wood, everything holds up on Danny's body for this one. It's a shame he got injured too. You know, Danny had a good match there too. So,
yeah, he said it. Basically, it was kind of like leapfrog, I think, and he landed wrong.
Yeah, which always goes to show you never know.
You never know.
The most basic stuff is where you're just like, what did I just hear pop?
Yeah, and that's why it's like, you know, it's scary.
Yeah, but we know wrestling's fake, so.
Yeah, you know. It's amazing how people go on Facebook and try to explain it. It's like, you know, if you're not interested, nobody cares your explanation of why it's not fake. You know, it's no different than going to a movie and doing all the other stuff. It's just like, It's a highly athletic thing, you know. That's why so many athletes who go to wrestling basically bottom out. They fail. Look at Gabe Stevenson. They paid him a lot of money for nothing.
Yeah. And it takes, you know, it takes someone who actually can put together the two aspects, you know. It's not the easiest thing to do. And there's, as much as they have found some good talent, you know, to develop in NXT and kind of move up like a Bianca Belair, you know, for everyone who really makes it, you have a good, you know, 20 who don't even make it through the performance center and end up burning out. So it's not the easiest thing in the world, for sure.
No. And even the ones that do succeed, you know, take a look at Moose, you know. Yeah, they kind of pushed him in Ring of Honor, but it took Moose, what, 10, 12 years to really become what a main guy in the business. And now, you know, Moose is awesome. Yeah. But I could not stand that dude at Ring of Honor. I'm like, oh, what is the hype about this guy? He's just a big dude. But now you have to, especially if you're not involved with it in the beginning, because, you know, at least if you're working through it and you're going through the indies, you're developing a character, a persona, you're learning the business. Even though it's a much smaller version of the business, you're learning it. You know, that's why I got a lot of respect for a guy like Robbie E. And Robbie E was a guy who I didn't pay much attention to him. I just knew, I thought he was an annoying motherfucker, and I didn't think he was very good at all. And I didn't like their, I was like, it's so like Jersey Shore, it's fucking the shits, whatever. Jesse Godders had no respect for the business. I met him on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
And it was a guy who didn't understand, because he walked into from Big Brother to a contract. And I remember we did it ended up being a seminar, and DJ Z and Robbie and Jesse were there. And Jesse was so like impatient with the younger guys, like he didn't get it. It was like, dude, you're not a great wrestler. You're in great shape, and you got on a TV show, and that's how you got the contract. Right. And I never knew Robbie's story. And I always say, you know, I got an email one time, and it was like, the fuck wants to do a seminar with fucking Robbie E? Get the fuck out of here. And then through the poker guy, the only good thing that he ever did, Johnny Ferrari, was he brought in Robbie E. And then I started talking to him, and then we used him. And it was like, you know, here's a guy from the East Coast driving up and down the East Coast, 50, 75 bucks for years, grinding and grinding. He was that epitome of that true indie guy. And then when all of a sudden he did a seminar, it was like, oh, I admit when I'm wrong. Like, this motherfucker gets it. And he was so helpful, and he's so polar opposite of, you know, the gimmick that he was running, the bromance and stuff, you know. But Robbie was in great shape. He worked hard. He busted his ass because he loved wrestling. Like, this guy, it took him 10, 12 years of grinding, where many people give up or they're not going to get anywhere. And, you know, it's disappointing to see he didn't really get much of a run with WWE and the NXT, and he's in and he's out as the manager. But you know what? He did something right to get that opportunity to get the contract. And I remember talking to him before that, because of his age, they didn't really want him for the wrestling, but they liked him for what he could bring.
And they're still using him. I mean,
right. And that's what I'm saying. There's so many cuts that they're keeping a fucking manager when that's the last thing that they ever want to really keep is a manager.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they're finding TV time for him as well. And it's the other guy on a bigger level is Adam Pearce. Pearce was working in Cali for years and years and years. Everyone knew Pearce. And, you know, he's made the best of the opportunity that he's gotten with that company, to the fact where everyone knows who the guy is now.
Tenfold. And, I know age is starting to creep up there, but, you know, having Pearce, or especially Nick Aldis, you know, getting involved physically. You know, I'm hoping it's Wade Barrett. You know, it seems like they're starting to sprinkle the seeds of bad news Barrett coming back. That could be a lot of fun.
And he said this week that he's not objected to doing one more. So, and you know,
well, he's probably doing very well for himself, but he also knows those WrestleMania payouts. You know, right. He knows the money's become insane now.
And you know, the one thing that in this business that I think that typical fan doesn't get is that if you get the opportunity to work a big match like that, potentially at WrestleMania with one of your closest friends, that's a dream. Like, it doesn't, you know, world championship is your goal, but to work one of your best friends on the grandest stage of all and get that payday and be working with your buddy.
Yeah, and then you bring it right back for the Nexus reunion. He lays out Sheamus, Michael Tarver. These guys are praying for that Nexus reunion, brother.
By that time, Daniel Bryan's contract's up, right? And then he comes back. And
there you go. You know. Well, remember, they used, who was it? The guy from England who did a show, and it was the Nexus reunion. They wrestled Royce and Jarrell.
Right.
It was PJ Black and Michael Tarver. So it was Justin Gabriel and Michael Tarver.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. We got to get PJ back out here.
I heard he got really fucked up again.
Oh, really? Shit.
Yeah, he fucked up his knee in an AEW match. I was talking to Brian Cage. He was telling me about it. Like, really fucked up.
Shit. Man,
because that's why he showed up in AEW, and then I kind of forgot he did, and then we were having a conversation. And it was either he was going out over and landed on somebody, or somebody landed on him, but totally fucking tore his knee up.
Jesus. Man.
Bad luck, man. The PJ Black.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Sunday the 22nd, 5 p.m. start for the first match, but pre-show. Doors open at 4. Pre-show will be before that. And again, you can check it out.
Yeah, get there early. Might be a 4:30 start if we're doing two pre-shows.
Yeah. Get in the line for the bar at 4, because
that's what I'm saying. I'll tell you what, there was the line. The show was just starting and the line was out the door.
Yeah. So that's
the side door, but it was still out the door.
Yeah, it's still out the door. You know, bring two friends this time. Bring three friends.
Right. You can alternate the line.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, we'll see you guys.